The fourth aliyah of Parshas Vayigash is brief but hugely consequential and hugely fascinating. Parshas Vayigash in general happens to be a parsha where midrashim play a very large role. There are many very often cited midrashim that have many fascinating interpretations, and this aliyah is no exception. There's a lot to pay attention to. So we'll just note here at the beginning. So Paro is telling the brothers that they should take the wagons out of Mitzrayim for the children and for their wives, and they should bring their father back with them. V'atatzu vesa zosasu. Here you are commanded to do this. And the Mefarshim discuss why it is that the command comes specifically through Paro and not through Yosef. Many different interpretations. Some suggest the Ramban, later Rav Hirsch, that Paro makes the command because even though Yosef could have done this himself, he wouldn't want to, because he wouldn't want to give the impression that he was abusing his power. So therefore, he didn't want to do that himself, and Paro was the one to do it. Now, this may have some additional significance for what comes later in the Liyah, so we'll keep that in mind. But he goes on to say, "Ve'einchem al tachos al kleichem ki tov kolaris mitzrayim lochem hu," and you shouldn't think at all about your things because all of Mitzrayim is available to you. The Aznayim Matorah, the Litzkarav, suggests over here that this is kind of the opposite of what we see with Yaakov, as we mentioned in Parshas Vayishlach, that Yaakov went back on the Pachim Ketanim because he was somebody who was so careful with his property. And here, Paro was saying, don't be careful with his property. That there, Chazal say with Yaakov, that tzaddikim are careful with their property because they don't take from Gezel. So it's a source of tremendous pride and chashivas to them, what they have. And here we're finding the opposite attitude with Paro, and perhaps that's the reference. So in any event, so that's what they do. And Yosef gives them a galos. This is going to be highly significant. The wagons, al pi Paro, through Paro's command. V'yitilahem etzeid l'darach, and he gives them food, l'darach. He gives them food for the way. And in addition to that, he also gives them extra clothes. The chulam nasan leish chalifos smalos. He gives them all extra clothes. The Alshech writes here, and others write that this is to be mishalim tova tachas ra. That here he's helping them in a way that they didn't help him, and that Tzor Hamor understands that this is to show that he's not holding anything against them. But in addition, Luvinyamin Nasan Shlosh Meos Kesef Chamesh Chalifos Smalos, and here he gave extra to Binyamin, extra money and extra clothing. So here the Farshim and the Gemara tries to figure out what's going on. The Gemara Maseches Megillah on Daf Tazayin and Mibbeis asks that it seems like the same mistake is happening all over again, that here Yosef got into trouble because of the extra garment that he got, and now Yosef himself is giving these extra garments to Binyamin. That's going to bring about the same kind of jealousy. So the Gemara says this is a remez to the descendant of Binyamin, who's going to wear this many levushei malchus, these many kingly garments. The Reshiv Kamri Avner of Goldricht has a long essay about this, about the significance of that, that's something that is highly relevant, that these clothes, these garments that are going from Yosef to Binyamin, ultimately to Mordechai, represent the whole externality of how one survives in Galus and how one is able to preserve his internal midos and his internal values even while he is walking among the kings in the exile. So there's a lot to be said about this, and that's itself a whole discussion. But the Vilna Gaon and others point out that it doesn't seem to answer the question. Okay, so there's a symbolism here, but what about the fact that he's still being Matul Kina? So the Vilna Gaon suggests that maybe it was still equal in value, that maybe even though there were more garments, so that allowed for a certain symbolism, but it didn't actually end up to be worth anything more than the other brothers. That's one possibility. While another suggestion, you find some Mefarshim, the Rav Rivlin, was the Mashgiach in Karen B'Yavne. We're going to have a lot of the Torah of Karen B'Yavne in this Aliyah. So Rav Rivlin, who was the Mashgiach of Karen B'Yavne, he has an essay for An Chumash that perhaps this is all a part of the theme that we saw before. We spoke about it a little bit last week in Parshas Miketz, that Yosef was continuously putting the brothers through a process in order to see if they really did do tshuva and if they really are ready to reconcile and to be forgiven. So that's how some of the Mefarshim have, the Ramban and the Akedah, that this is a way of testing if they still have that midah of jealousy, or are they able to overcome this attribute and they're able to not feel this kind of kinah. The language of the Ravenel, when he talks about this, is that it was also a way of punishing them and helping to be mechaper for them for this avera. Rav Rivlin found that very difficult, because that role we don't play. So if there's some idea that Yosef felt he needed to test to see if there really was a process of growth, that's one thing. But to think that it's his job to punish them, that he's in the place of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's both practically and hashkafically a very difficult role to assume. And that's perhaps comparable to what the Gemara says in the end of the first paragraph of Abashra about Penina, who the Gemara says she meant well, that she, the other wife of the husband of Chana, when Chana, before Shmuel was born, and she was going through such misery, she didn't have children. And the Navi tells us that Penina would mock her, and she apparently meant well in order to try to get her to daven harder, but that's not an excuse, that's not a defense, that's not your job. And so too, that would seem also to be the case if Yosef felt that it was his job to actually punish the brothers. So Rav Rivlin thought that that's unlikely to be the pshat. But okay, so in any event, he gives them what he gives them. And he sends also things for his father. Aviv shalach gezos asara chamorim nosim mituv mitzrayim v'eser asonos nosos bar v'lechem mazon le'aviv l'darach. He sends much food and animals, apparently. V'yishalach es echav v'yilechu v'yomer aleihem al tirgezu badarach. So he sent them on their way, and he said al tirgezu badarach. So what does that mean, al tirgezu? So many different ways to translate this. The Rashbam says it means that you shouldn't worry, you won't be hurt on the way. And the Gemara in Maseches Tainis and Daf Yud Amud Beis has a couple of Mefarshim here, has a couple of Perushim here. One is that you shouldn't be Osek in a Dvar Halacha on the way, so you shouldn't come to fight. That's an interesting discussion of what exactly is the connection between fighting in a sugya specifically because you're on the way. Rabbeinu Bachya writes that it's only a problem if you're learning Be'iyun. And the Yoznayim Torah writes that if you're sitting in your place in the Beis Medrash, so then you can look things up and you can ask your Rebbe and you're eventually going to stop fighting. But by Derech, there's no recourse, and people get very stubborn and they dig themselves in and they're going to fight. So that's a possibility. But perhaps to be more specific to the circumstance, he also notes that Yosef was worried that now, given all that's happened, on the way back, they're going to revisit their initial psak about Yosef, that he was a rodef, and that they decided to go after him. And that's going to be a cause of real machlokas. That's going to be something that they're going to fight over. It's interesting, and possibly relevant to that, the Gemara that has this drasha in Tainis, the Gemara then has another drasha on this, that you shouldn't take big steps. You shouldn't take up siagasa, and you should go only carefully. You should go b'chitov, you should go during the daytime. So the Sefer Ber Yosef, he suggests that all these concepts are related, that their whole original mistake in assessing Yosef as a rodef was that they paskined on the derech, that they were on their way, and that they came to a hasty conclusion without the proper yishuv hadas, without the proper iyun. And that's what this other drasha is saying also, that when you go into a town or you're going on your way, you have to be careful how you travel, and you have to understand that you are compromised and that you're not actually able to focus and to recognize the sakana that exists at that time. And presumably there's also a message here that they were on a certain path already in terms of their psak, and that they had their subjective attitudes and biases, and that's also what led them to this whole tremendous misfortune. And now there's an opportunity to rethink this and to understand just how they went wrong. And that's a part of the message, presumably, as well. So v'yalum Mitzrayim v'yavor, it's Kanan el Yaakov avihem, so they went up from Mitzrayim, and they went to Yaakov, their father, v'yagidu lo leimor, od Yosef chai. So they went and they told him that Yosef is still alive. We have a tradition here, it's in the Zohar and the Sefer Yashar, that this was broken to him actually by Sarach Bas Asher. She had a way of singing that made things much easier to take, because as wonderful and as welcome as this news would be, it's such an incredible shock, and it's going to be very difficult for an older man who's spent so many years thinking that his son was no longer alive to be able to process this. So she had to break it in a very careful way. And Chazal say that she got a tremendous reward for this. She never died, and she lived for a very long time, and then went into Gan Eden alive. It's really a fascinating idea, because normally you think everyone wants to give good news. That's the easy part. Nobody wants to give bad news. But here, even good news, that was just such a shock, had to also be conveyed in a very careful way. And Sarach Bas Asher, because she was the one who was able to do this, that was such a source of merit for her. It's one of the greatest rewards we hear ever given to anyone, because she was able to convey Dafka this good news in such a careful way. So this is what was told to Yaakov, V'chihu Moshel b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. V'yafag libo kilo hamim lahem. So this is what he was told, and he didn't believe it. So this language of v'yafag libo, there are many different perushim in the Mefarshim, exactly what that means. Rashi suggests it means he turned away from it. Others suggest it means that his heart stopped, the whole concern that somebody can't really process news like this. It seems like, however exactly you translate it, the connotation essentially is of somebody who just doesn't allow himself to believe something, that there's a very mixed emotion, that you hear it and you don't hear it at the same time, that you're processing something, you're taking something in, but you're not allowing yourself to really assimilate it as actually factual. And that's what he is dealing with. And he doesn't believe them. Kilo hamin lahem. And the Medrash says that that's the punishment of a liar, of a badai, that even when he says the truth, people don't believe. So the brothers, here, they're finally saying something that is correct, but they don't have credibility anymore. And so that's the onesh, that they're not believed for what they are transmitting here. It's actually the truth. And Schwab has a comment about this, that a part of why they weren't believed is because the story didn't make any sense, and they didn't want to tell the whole story in a way that made sense. They didn't go into everything about the Mechira, because that would have been very, very incriminating for them. That wasn't something that they wanted to share. But if they don't bring in all these details, so then the story is not going to be at all believable. So that's also a part of the direct consequences of their historic dishonesty here. So ultimately, he would come to believe it when he hears everything in context. But certainly, without the details that they weren't too eager to share, so that was also a part of why he didn't believe them. So the pasuk continues to say, "Vayidabru elav es kol divrei Yosef asher diber aleihem, vayaris hagalos asher shalach Yosef laseisoso v'techiruach Yaakov avihem." So this last pasuk has quite a lot to say. So first, the pasuk begins that he told them everything. So the Dabbu was called the Yosef. That's consistent with what Schwab had said, that once they started to say the extra details, so then that changed things, and then he was able to believe. But there was also a fascinating interpretation that the Rashi of Rabbi Avner of Goldwicht quoted from Rav Yeshua of Belz, and he suggests that the reading is like this, that the previous pasuk says that they told him, they told Yaakov that Yosef was still alive, and he's a Moshe b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, that that's what they were told to say, and Yaakov didn't believe it. So what's pshat? So the idea was that the original quote that Yosef said, which is in the beginning of Shlishi. So there the pasuk says, V'ata Lo atem shlachtem osi hena ki ha'elokim v'yasimeni la'av l'faro la'adon l'chol beso u'mosho b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. So there, what the pasuk means is that Yosef was saying that it wasn't you who arranged this, it was God who did this. He's the one who put me here, and he made me like an av l'faro ula adon l'chol beso. And that's what he did to me. That's how I was placed. U'mosho b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. Who's the Moshe? That's God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Moshe b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. But that's really what Yosef meant. But the brothers didn't understand that. So the way they paraphrased it, that's what the pasuk here says, v'chi hu Moshe b'chol eretz Mitzrayim, that Yosef was the Moshe on all eretz Mitzrayim. So Yaakov didn't believe that Yosef would talk like that, so that's where he said it can't be, and then he said, tell me again, tell me exactly what he said, say exactly how it was. So then, that's what this pasuk says, v'yadabru elav eis kol divrei Yosef asher diber aleihem, exactly how he said it, and then he understood, oh, he didn't mean to say that he's the Moshe over Mitzrayim, he meant that, yes, he was made la'av la'odom, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was emotional. So then he understood, and that's what put everything into place. A very fascinating pshat. The Chasam Sofer had a different idea, that he said the emphasis about Kihu Moshe B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim is to say that Yosef was ruling over Mitzrayim and not Mitzrayim over him, which was certainly an important message for Yaakov to hear. But in any event, right after this phrase, so it says a very often cited notion, the Midrashim here are very well known, Vayaris HaGolos. So he saw the wagons. He saw the wagons, Asher Shalach Yosef L'Seisoso, V'atechi Ruach Yaakov Avim. And then his spirit came back to him. The spirit was revived. So somehow, seeing these wagons, that was a tremendous thing. So why was that so significant? So perhaps what's most well known here is what Rashi quotes, that Rashi relates that Simon Masa Lahem Haya Osek Kishaparish Menu. So he sent a sign, some kind of reminder of what it was they were involved in when they separated from each other. That was the Parsha of the Egla Rufa. So that was what brought it back. And there, the Das Sekenim quotes the idea that Yosef was being escorted by Yaakov, and Yaakov was bringing him down to meet the brothers, and Yosef said, why are you doing that? Why don't you go back? And Yaakov told him about the sugya of Egla Rufa, and there we know the message is that is to tell us the importance of Levaya, of escorting, because that the Torah describes how the Egla Rufa has to, that whole process has to happen when there is a dead body found and we don't know what happened to him, and the Zakenim have to say that we didn't kill him. And the Gemara explains in Sota that it's not that we actually think that they murdered this person, but that we didn't send him away without Lavaya, that we didn't make sure to escort him and to protect him from danger. So Yaakov was teaching this sugya to Yosef, and that's the last thing they learned together. So this was what was going to bring it back to mind. And the Maharal says that this is part of the message also to convey that you're not alone, that you have the koach of the klal behind you. And in the Sefer Imri Baruch, my friend Rabbi Simon, he quotes from the Mechamas Yehuda that the point here is the importance of the sensitivity of Ben Adam L'Chavero, that without that sensitivity, it can lead to murder. And this is what kept Yosef alive, the fact that he had that sensitivity and he cared about the Sar HaMashkim, and that was what ultimately got him out of jail and brought him to prominence so that he was able to remember that whole message. So that was very significant. There are many other interpretations of this significance. We mentioned that there's a lot of Torah of Karen B'Yavna regarding this Aliyah. So Rav Tuvi was a Rosh Kolel in Karen B'Yavna. A few years ago, they sent out a Dvar Torah from Rav Tuvi that he understood that the point of the Egla Rufa is to show that murder doesn't have to just be one direct violent action. It can be incremental. It can be the result of a lot of smaller sins of omission, a lot of smaller passive realities, and it's not just sudden. And so too, influence is incremental, and influence is something that builds up over time. And the fact that Yosef was protected for the long term through the influence of Yaakov and through how he escorted him, not just physically, but he provided him with the spiritual tools to survive. All of that was crucial to what happened and to his ability to endure, and that was a part of the message. So these interpretations all assume a kind of a linguistic trick that the Egolos and the Eglos, the Egolos and the Eglos are related, that the wagons and calves are related, that we have to assume a linguistic connection between the Egolos of the wagons and the Eglos of the calves. Some of the Mephoreshim understand that he sent calves with the wagons, and that's what he saw also, and that goes back to the beginning of the Aliyah, that why was it necessary for Paro specifically to give the order, because it was understood that you can't send those animals outside of Mitzrayim without Paro's permission. And that was also what confirmed that Yosef really was who he claimed to be, the fact that they were able to bring these animals out of Egypt. But there are those who suggest that maybe the imagery is not necessarily to calves, but are to other wagons. And there's a statement like that in the Zohar and elsewhere, that this is the remez here was to other wagons, to other agalos, to the Sheish Agalos Tzav, that the Torah in Parshas Nasa talks about regarding the Nisim, that the Nisim brought to the Mishkan. And that was the imagery. So what's the connection there? So this, to go back again to Karen Biavna, so Rav Goldfuss has an essay about this, where he suggests that these wagons were the contributions of the Nisim, who felt left out, that they had been too slow to the game and they hadn't brought anything to the Mishkan. So then they took the initiative and they said, okay, what else is going to be necessary for the Mishkan? It's going to have to be transported during the downtime, so there's going to be a need for wagons for that, and they took the initiative to contribute those. And that shows the kind of Torah Shebal Peh power, the idea of an intuitive value system that the Nisim represented and were able to bring to the table. And that's also a part of the message that Yaakov was getting from Yosef, and the idea that Yosef was protected from the Nisyonos and Mitzrayim through the Demus Diokno of his father, of that presence playing a constant role. And that's also a possibility as far as the message. In the Sefer Shari Ora of Rav Meir Tzvi Bergman, so he mentions an interpretation here also about this idea of the wagons of the Nisim, and he suggests that there it represents Achdus, and that was a part of the message, that here the brothers are reconciling, they're coming back together again, and he says that's also a pshat, another one of the very well-known midrashim in Parshas Vayigash, that the idea that Yosef and Binyamin were crying on each other's shoulders, and the Chazal tell us that they were crying over the destruction that will happen in the future of the Batei Mikdash and of Shiloh, and that was a source of weeping for them. And it's hard to understand why all of a sudden then are they getting this nevuah that they should be crying about at that time of reconciliation. And he suggests that's the point, that here they had sold Yosef because of this hatred, and now there is a moment of redemption from that, but it keeps coming up again and again, and the Batei Mikdash are going to be destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, so the knowledge that is going to once again be present, and that seems to be a constant theme, even if there are moments of redemption from that. So that was what was a source of anguish at that time. So this idea that here, right now, they are unified, and the Korbanos of the Nisim, they all brought the same thing. So there is that imagery there as well. So perhaps that's what's being conveyed. But then he has yet another pshat, Shari Ora, a completely different interpretation, a very fascinating interpretation. And he focuses specifically on the wagons themselves, not necessarily that they represent anything else, but that the whole idea, the Torah describes them as carrying 10 donkeys that were carrying all of the bounty of Mitzrayim and all of this food that was with them as well. And if you look at Rashi, so it sounds like not necessarily they had those that many animals, but that there was that much food, a tremendous amount of food that was being sent specifically to Yaakov. So why was it that all this food was being sent to Yaakov? So there was food that was sent to them, sent with them to be Tzeidu L'Derech, that they should be able to sustain themselves on the way to pick up Yaakov. And then for the way back, so there was a tremendous amount that was being put in the hands of Yaakov, that Yaakov would be able to control that distribution. And that was an act of kibbutz, that everyone was going to have to turn to Yaakov for support to be sustained. So that increased his stature. So that was a mitzvah of kibbutz that Yaakov was carrying out. So when Yaakov saw that, Yosef was carrying out. So when Yaakov saw that, he was tremendously impressed. And he realized that Yosef learned this from Yaakov himself, because in the end of Parshas Vayetze, when there's the whole back and forth between Yaakov and Lavan, so Yaakov actually displays a lesson there in respect for one's father-in-law. It's also a detail of Kibbutz Avim. And as the Torah says, that they decided to make a covenant there, and that Yaakov instructs the brothers of Lavan who were with him that they should come to eat with them. And the idea that he was talking to the brothers specifically is he was making it look like all of this suda was being provided by Lavan, and that this was a way of directing kavod to Lavan. So apparently that whole process and that whole midah that Yaakov was showing honor to his father-in-law in this way, by assigning all of the food distribution to him, so that should increase his stature. So Yosef apparently learned the lesson, and he did the same thing to Yaakov. He made Yaakov in charge of giving out the food to increase his stature. So Yaakov saw that Yosef learned this lesson. He was so impressed. He realized, okay, this is my Yosef, and not only is it Yosef, but it's Yosef who has maintained his sensitivity through all this time, that he's really learned the lesson. And that was a fantastic thing. And in this context, Rav Bergman, who is the son-in-law of Rav Shach, so he quotes a vort from his father-in-law, from Rav Shach, commenting on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which quotes Rav Lazar ben Azariah saying, "Im ein Torah ein derech eretz, im ein derech eretz ein Torah." So the Mefarshim say, well, how could it be both? That you don't have Torah without derech eretz, you don't have derech eretz without Torah, so one's got to come first, the chicken and the egg, so you're going to have one without the other. So how could that be? So Rav Shach explained that there's two types of derech eretz. The derech eretz, that's the general basic midos that the whole world should be able to learn. So that, yes, that you need to have before Torah, the basic derech eretz that everyone understands. But then there's a higher level of derech eretz that is a sensitivity that is so profound and is so specific that can only come through Torah. So first you need the basic derech eretz to get Torah, and then once you have Torah, so then you can have the real derech eretz of the Talmud Chacham, ideally. So here, Yaakov saw that Yosef had that midah, so he was tremendously impressed by that, and that restored his whole soul. The Sefer Habir Yaakov notes that presumably there was a simpler way to do this, but whatever interpretation you take, so the notion of some kind of a message that's being conveyed through Torah here is also a part of the theme, that Yaakov is expressing the Gashmias through Torah itself, and that's also a part of how he is bringing to the forefront that he is still the same Yaakov, that he has persevered, and that is what is able to gladden Yaakov's soul and bring him back completely. And this idea of Atechi Ruach, so here as Unklos explains, Shar Sel of Shechina, that the Shechina settled upon him, and we know we have a notion that Chazal have, that all this time that Yosef was missing, talked a little bit about this last week, that Yaakov's Ruach HaKodesh was flawed, it was incomplete, that he had aspects of Ruach HaKodesh, but not the whole story. He clearly didn't understand what was going on with Yosef, there was something missing, so now it was able to all come back together again, to all be restored, and that was the source now of completion that he was able to feel. So a very fascinating aliyah, and it should inspire us to also be sensitive to all of these notions of derech eretz, of how Torah is a source of bonding, how all of these different sensitivities should manifest themselves in a way that creates a complete personality. And through that, we should be zoche to reconcile. We should be zoche to perfect our midos ben adam l'chavero, which is one of the great tafkidim of Asara B'Teves coming up next week. And it was mentioned that Rav Shlomo Fisher suggested that Asara B'Teves, that was the day of Mechiras Yosef, that was the day when Yosef was sold. And that is, as the Meshech Chachma doesn't understand, the sale of Yosef was the paradigmatic Avera ben Adam l'Chavero. It was the Avera that really represents all the ways that we can mistreat each other. And so the notion of tshuva that the Tanaisim bring up for us is that we need to do tshuva overall, but certainly this theme specifically of mitzvos ben Adam l'Chavero that is represented by how Yosef was treated by his brothers, and it's often brought up the question of why is it that people seem to be so much better at mitzvahs ben adam l'makom than they are at mitzvahs ben adam l'chavero. And I think the pshat to some extent is that it's not that they don't care about mitzvahs ben adam l'chavero, but that mitzvahs ben adam l'chavero are very hard. And it's very easy to come up with rationalizations and justifications, and that confuses things. And that's indeed what happened with the brothers, that they had this whole cheshbon, that Yosef was a rodef, and that this is what they had to do, and that's what needs to be corrected. So the avoda of the upcoming tainus is to really think carefully about the midos and the derech eretz and the objective standards with which we need to treat each other. And through that, we should be able to bring genuine reconciliation, general respect for each other, and we should bring collectively a tikkun for this avera that continues to impact and to reverberate throughout the generations. And we should know no more sorrow, we should know no more fasting, and only a complete redemption. You should have a wonderful Shabbos.